Fear and Loathing, The Dark Days of the Essex Witch Trials.
An ambush of Amy's, an army of Anne's, a drift of James, a murder of Margaret's, a rake of Rebecca's, a rush of Rose's, a siege of Susan's.
Welcome to this walk from Manningtree to Misley. It's inspired by the East Anglian witch trials, which took place between 1645 and 1647. During this particularly dark period of English history, around 300 people were tried for witchcraft, and close to 100 were executed as witches. Fear and Loathing is not a history of witchcraft, but instead an atmospheric exploration of some of the sites where self-styled witchfinders, Matthew Hopkins and John Stern, exposed, interrogated, and facilitated the deaths of women and some men for causing harm by magical means. The walk was produced in collaboration with the artist Susan Puisan-Lock and is part of a project called A Coven, A Grove, A Stand, which was commissioned by New Geographies. As we investigate the sites, we'll hear excerpts from Susan's audio work, Seven Sisters, which conjures back to life the names of the individuals accused and often executed as witches. We'll also hear from Alison Rowlands, Professor of European History at the University of Essex, who has written widely on the European and Essex witch trials of the 17th century. Stop 1. Plotting. White Hart Pub, Manningtree High Street.
1665, Dunwich, Suffolk. My name is Aubrey Grinsett. I am a beggar woman. I am accused by Thomas Spatchett, a former bailiff and official watcher for witches for Matthew Hopkins, of causing him to suffer fits. I confess to causing the deaths of John Collett of Cookley and Henry Winson of Walpole. I acquired my powers 20 years ago after meeting a witch at a wedding and entering into a diabolical pact. I am suspected but not condemned.
The rundown building opposite was once the White Hart Pub. It dates back to at least the 17th century, and according to local legend, is one of the inns where witch finders Matthew Hopkins and John Stern met with local accusers to plan their persecutions. It's important to remember that witchcraft had been criminalised in England since 1563, and in order for a crime to be investigated, a woman or man first had to be accused, usually by somebody in the local community. The accuser then contacted a local magistrate, or justice of the peace, who would then search for proof and build up a picture of the bewitching.
Hi, I'm Alison Rowlands. I'm a professor in European history at the University of Essex. So what you do, if you want to bring an accusation against somebody, you would go to a JP and bring the charge, and they would then start investigating it. And it's at that point that, first of all, John Stern is brought in to the procedure, because the local people here, they sort of ask John Stern, who also lives in Manningtree at that point, to take their complaints to the JPs. And then the JPs ask him to help some of the investigations, and then Matthew Hopkins sort of gets involved as well. It's almost certainly the case that Hopkins and Stern and the accusers and the JPs, they would have met in pubs, because that's where, you know, men of standing kind of got together. They'd have met in a meeting room in an inn. You know, and you may have taken statements and sort of met with people, talked with people. So I think any kind of localish pub that would have been around in the 17th century, you could probably make that case for.
There are very few places that historians can say with certainty which events happened where. In place of historical evidence, myths and legends will naturally emerge to fill the void. In the case of the East Anglian witch trials, local stories have long connected the White Hart Inn to the witchfinder's plotting. This might, of course, have benefited the landlord, hoping to gain some ghoulish trade. Stop 2. Hanging. South Street, Manningtree.
1645, Chelmsford, Essex. My name is Elizabeth Clark of Manningtree. I am a one-legged woman, the daughter of a hanged witch. I am suspected of causing the death by witchcraft of the wife of John Rivet, a tailor. I am questioned by John Stern and searched by Mary Phillips and other local women for the teats with which I feed my familiar spirits. Matthew Hopkins lies in wait for my familiars and reports that he sees five materialise in the form of a cat called Holt, a legless spaniel called Jamara, a greyhound called Vinegar Tom, a rabbit-like figure called Sack and Sugar, and a polecat called News. He walks me back and forth continuously without a break until I am exhausted. I confess to keeping familiars and having intercourse with the devil. I name five other women, Anne and Rebecca West, Anne Leach, Elizabeth Gooding, and Helen Clark, who in turn identify others. I am taken back to Manningtree to be hanged.
Surrounded by large, well-kept Georgian houses and high up on a hill, today South Street is one of Manningtree's most desirable areas. Yet it was here, on July the 18th, 1645, that four local women were hanged for the crime of witchcraft. Their names were Anne West of Lawford, Helen Clark of Manningtree, Marion Hockett from Ramsey, and Anne Cooper from Great Clacton. According to historical records, 92 witnesses testified against these women and 15 others during the trial. This is worth thinking about for a moment. This means that nearly 100 people were prepared to travel and give evidence, a huge amount of their time, money, and reputations, to make sure that these women hung.
That's something which usually gets missed out, the local story, because that's very hard, isn't it, to think that your community actually invested a lot of effort in trials. I think somehow it's easier to say, oh, it was Hopkins, you know, he's an easy villain. And I think you see that in, it's not just peculiar to this one, you see that in other parts of Europe where you can kind of, it's nice to blame one villainous person, but actually you can't have a trial unless there's somebody willing to make an accusation. So every single person who was tried, somebody from their community has accused them of causing some sort of harm through witchcraft.
Without any legal representation, the women were arrested, interrogated, and kept prisoner in the cells of Colchester Castle before being tried at the Assize Courts in Chelmsford. 15 of them were executed in Chelmsford, but the four named above were brought back to Manningtree to be hung here on the village green before a large gathered crowd.
Early modern hangings were fairly basic. The 17th century hanging was slow strangulation, so you just needed a fairly rough frame and a ladder and rope, and then, you know, you put the rope around the person's neck and then just sort of push them, and they dangle there until they asphyxiate, which is why family members would sometimes kind of be allowed to go and pull on their own legs.
Stop 3, praying. Number 42, Manningtree High Street.
1699, Cogshall, Essex. My name is Widow Coman. I have a long-standing reputation as a witch. The Reverend Jane Boyce made me confess my sins and admit my use of magic. I confessed to signing a pact with the devil and agreeing not to enter a church for 5 years and keeping a familiar which I feed at my fundament and sticking pins in waxen images. I stumble over the words of the Lord's Prayer and refuse to renounce the devil and his imps. I am seized by a mob of villagers led by James Haynes. They drag me to the local river and subject me to the ordeal of swimming, watched by a crowd of several hundreds. I survive 3 duckings in the month of July, but I die in December. I am never brought to trial, but I am searched after my death for witches' marks and supernumerary nipples for the feeding of imps. I am buried without Christian rites.
This old brick wall next to the hairdresser's would be easy enough to miss. But look up, and you'll see a plaque fixed to the brickwork which reads, site of the Church of St Michael's and All Angels, 1616 to 1966. This buttress wall is all that remains of Manningtree's church, the same church where the local community, accusers and accused, watchers and searchers, witch finders and prosecutors, would have met for regular worship. It's also where the self-styled witchfinder general Matthew Hopkins' stepfather, who was the rector of Misley and Manningtree, preached his sermons to a largely pious crowd. During the 16th century, the country had experienced the turmoil of the English Civil War and the English Reformation, which had turned the tide of religion from Catholic to Protestant. This was a time of insecurity, mistrust, and religious disputes. According to some historians, this upheaval contributed to the climate of fear and blame. Malcolm Gaskill, author of Witchfinders, a 17th century English tragedy, sums up the era's uncertainty.
These were days of shaking, of rebellion and fighting, of uncertainty, fear and grief. The orderly world created and governed by heaven was being turned upside down. Fair was foul and foul was fair. That year, brother had slain brother. Parliament had ruled without a king. Harvests had spoiled in the fields while folk went hungry, and plagues and agues had touched high and low with a fickle hand. The devil reigned.
Stop 4, swimming. The Hopping Bridge.
1613, Bedford, Bedfordshire. My name is Mary Sutton, daughter of Mother Sutton. One of my three illegitimate children is cuffed by a servant of Master Anger for throwing stones, dirt and filth into his mill dams. We retaliate by working our magic to unsettle them. Mr. Anger has me beaten with a cudgel until I am scarce able to stir. I am bound and slung into water and sink for a moment, then float as if on a plank. I am beaten and swam again until I confess all. I am convicted and executed.
We've now reached what's known locally as the Hopping Bridge. This bridge itself wouldn't have been here during the period of the witch trials, as it was built in the 18th century. But bodies of water like this one were used to test the guilt or innocence of suspected witches by a process known as swimming. The theory behind it was that the innocent would sink, but the guilty would float. This could then be used as proof of their crimes. Swimming may also have had religious connotations. Those who had renounced God and were in league with the devil would be rejected by the purity of the water, and so would naturally float.
What they would do is that the victim would be tied, they would tie them crossways. They were supposed to tie their opposite thumbs and big toes. And then they would put a rope under the suspect's armpits and sort of bob them in. But obviously, you've got quite a lot of control. It's clearly not an objective test anyway. But I mean, if you've got a rope under their armpits to drag them in and out with, you've got some sort of leverage. I mean, I think it's really sort of another form of quasi-torture. It's like kind of almost like waterboarding in a way. You know, you could leave them under and then get them out just before they... So although it's supposed to be a test of guilt or innocence, it's in a very, very grey legal area. And that's, I think, why Parliament in 1645 says, you know, just stop doing it, because it is very, very kind of... problematic. It's sort of semi-legal but not really, so it's supposed to be a test, but it really, I think, just gives more space for coercion in the whole process.
Stop 5, haunting. Misley Pond.
1712, Walken, Hertfordshire. My name is Jane Wenham. I am 70 years old and have long had a reputation as a witch. I am known as the Wise Woman of Walken. I am accused of bewitching a farm labourer, Matthew Gilson, when he refuses me a pennyworth of straw. I'm accused by the 16-year-old servant girl, Anne Thorne, of using magic to afflict her with fits and hallucinations of cat-like demons and causing her to vomit pins. She says my magic forced her to run half a mile and gather sticks for me. Witnesses say they have seen numerous cats at Anne Thorne's door, one of them bearing my face. I'm arrested and searched for the devil's mark. Pins are plunged into my arms to see if the blood flows freely and whether I feel any pain. I stumble over the Lord's Prayer. I am charged with conversing with the devil in the shape of a cat. 16 witnesses give evidence against me. I make a full confession and admit that I am a witch, but I protest that I only practice harmless white magic.
The ghost of Matthew Hopkins, in full 17th century costume, is said to haunt Missley Pond. This could very well be more colourful local legend. But ghosts are sometimes said to haunt lakes, pools and rivers, strengthening the idea of water as a portal between the living and the dead. Like the hopping bridge we saw earlier, the pond is another likely site for witch swimming. Swimming was one of several euphemisms used for the witch finder's practice of extracting confessions or finding proof through semi-legal means. Suspected witches were also watched and searched in the belief they would call on their familiars, often cats, dogs, toads, even ferrets, for help. Watching involved walking the suspect back and forth for days and nights on end until they finally broke down.
The idea being that would give you proof very much inverted commas that they were witches, but it sort of amounted obviously to torture, because watching was effectively sleep deprivation. I don't know if you've seen the image on the front of the pamphlet, the Hopkins publication in 1647. It shows him and two women on chairs, and they would have been watched. They'd often be tied to chairs with familiars, exactly, yeah. But I mean, you could do that much more easily in somebody's home, you know, because that could often go on for two or three days and nights, and you'd have local people. But again, you'd have local people helping, acting as watch. They were called watchers. They would actually watch to see what would happen. So again, there's a massive communal investment of effort in the witch finding.
Another euphemistic phrase, searching, actually included probing the bodies of the accused for physical evidence, specifically looking for teats, which were used to suckle their familiars. This would amount to proof that could then be used against them.
The women who were accused, their bodies were searched, you know, and, you know, in really humiliating and painful probing ways, and they'd have kind of blemishes and marks pricked with needles to see if they bled. So searching is very euphemistic. It's sort of classic witch finding euphemism. Searching actually is very horrible.
Stop 6, hiding. Old Knobley.
1567, Great Dunmow, Essex. My name is Alice Prestmarie. I am found guilty of causing by witchcraft the life-threatening illness of Edward Parker, son of a local tanner. My punishment is not known.
Known as Old Knobley, this ancient gnarled oak tree is thought to be around 800 years old. Over the centuries, it has borne witness to wars, famines, even a mini ice age, as well, of course, as the 17th century witch hunts. Trees like these hold a double meaning in our story of the witch trials. They represent both sanctuary for those fleeing their accusers, but also persecution, as the branch of a sturdy tree was sometimes used for hanging those found guilty. Old Knobley was one of 270 sites nominated by the public for New Geographies, a three-year project remapping the east of England through a series of artist commissions, which reflected on local stories of unexplored or overlooked places. Artist Susan Puisan Locke chose to recreate Old Knobley for her recent artwork, A Coven, A Grove, A Stand, which was commissioned by New Geographies.
I was interested in seven of the sites that were nominated by the public, seven out of 270, and all those sites were in some way associated with the folklore around witchcraft or reference the witch persecutions across the east of England over a 200-year period, including a very concentrated two-year period between 1645 and 1647. I was struck by the recurring image of the tree as a symbol of both power and of sanctuary. And quite early on, I wanted to bring it into the gallery in some way and make that presence disturbing and awe-inspiring, but to explore through that the relationship to place and history and myth.
Stop 7, connecting. Ancient path between Misley and Manningtree.
1576, Hatfield, Peveril, Essex. My name is Agnes Bromley. I am found guilty of bewitching to death sundry livestock and a local labourer named John Baker. I am hanged.
The path we're now going to follow back to Manningtree is an ancient trackway connecting the villages of Manningtree and nearby Misley. The path passes the site of St Mary's Church at Misley Heath, where Matthew Hopkins is buried. Nothing remains of the church or the graveyard today. We can imagine this path being regularly walked by some of the accused women, like Anne Leach, who lived at Misley, and her daughter, Helen Clark from Manningtree. In good times, they would have trod this path between the villages to visit each other, and later, during the dark days of the witch trials, fleeing along it for their lives. As we follow this ancient path back to town, this is a chance to reimagine the landscape. Today, this might be a tranquil place where people walk their dogs and children play, but a few generations ago, it bore witness to one of the most tragic episodes in English history. As we walk back to town, we'll bear witness to the women who were persecuted here by remembering their names.
1645, Chelmsford, Essex. My name is Joan Cooper of Great Clacton. I am suspected of being a witch.
1645, Chelmsford, Essex. My name is Mary Greenleaf. I am suspected of being a witch.
1645, Chelmsford, Essex. My name is Mary Johnson of Wivenhoe. I am suspected of being a witch.
1645, Chelmsford, Essex. My name is Rebecca West. I am persuaded to admit to marrying the devil, and I also accuse my mother, Anne West, of being a witch.
1645, Chelmsford, Essex. My name is Anne West. My daughter accuses me of being a witch.
Four of us die in prison. 29 of us are brought to trial. 19 of us are condemned to death.